Hello and welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 20 with me, Rafe Blanford.
And myself, Ewan Spence. It's a doubleheader show as we're all recovering from our travels. I have been down in London for Over the Air. We'll talk more about that in a second. Steve is recovering from a nosebleed because he's been down the bus stop. And Rafe, where have you been?
I've been over to Las Vegas in America to go to the CTIA conference.
Now, they always say what stays in Vegas happens in Vegas, or the other way around. Is that the case here?
No, fortunately there is some news that can come out of Vegas, although equally well there are some things that I won't be repeating. Las Vegas, as you know, is a rather interesting city, and as well as working I had a bit of time for fun as well. But there was a fair amount of news, perhaps not so much from the Symbian world, but I did see a couple of interesting things, and I think it's worth talking about some of the trends that came out of CTIA this year.
I mean, one of the things that we always know on All About Symbian is there's this strange, you know, Symbian in America compared to Symbian in Europe and Asia is two completely different ball games. I mean, are they getting closer together or further apart with these trends?
Well, that's a good question. I think Symbian would like to think that things are getting closer together, but I think the reality is that there's still some way to go. Perhaps the difference is now there is light at the end of the tunnel. On the first day of CTIA, or rather the pre-day, there's something called the Smartphone Summit, which is where the American audience can hear about the latest in smartphones. And it's effectively been taken over by Symbian and has a purely sort of Symbian program. It's kind of the Symbian conference for the US, if you like. But what emerges very strongly from that is smartphones are still perceived as an enterprise tool. They're not really perceived as a consumer tool at all. And you may remember from the smartphone show in the UK a few years back that Symbian started talking about the digital native and the idea that people would increasingly live their lives in the digital sense through their mobile phones. Yet this was the thing that Nigel Clifford was talking about at the Smartphone Summit in Las Vegas this year. And I think that reflects the fact that the US is several years behind. And while that sort of thing is now taken for granted for the most part in Europe, and it's just a question of how it's going to all work, how things are going to be tied together, it was still a relatively new idea in the US. I think that's sort of further underlined by the fact that all the excitement is still around enterprise applications for smartphones, reflecting the fact that it's an enterprise tool. Indeed, the Symbian stand was actually found in the Enterprise Pavilion at CTIA. Now, that's partly because the show's very heavily booked, but it also, I think, reflects the general attitude of the US that smartphones are still an enterprise thing. And part of the reason Symbian is so weak in the US is because there are a lot of competitors in the enterprise space, and it's perfectly possible to argue that Symbian doesn't have a particularly strong enterprise presence. While Nokia's E-series devices and some of Sony Ericsson's UIQ devices are clearly targeted to enterprise, their experience there isn't as far ahead as it says in the consumer space. So, you know, if smartphones started to be adopted in the consumer space, we might see a change there. But as ever, it's really the operators in the US that are causing much of the problem. They're not terribly keen on things that take away control from themselves, and thus software platforms aren't always seen as a good thing. In Europe, of course, operators see software platforms as a way to cut costs and get complex devices to market quicker because of the support issues and the customization issues. In the US, they're just not that advanced, and the likes of T-Mobile and AT&T, the two GSM operators, and therefore the ones that can really benefit from the S60 devices, have really chosen not to do so to this point. And I think what speaks to this point really is the announcement of a device called the Samsung Instinct, which was sort of held up as an iPhone-like device on the Sprint network. And, you know, indeed, it was quite a good device in many ways, but it was fundamentally closed despite what they were claiming about it. You know, it was just a feature phone, and so the sort of until the Americans change their attitude in that regard, and there are plenty who want to do so, I would stress that it's really an operator thing holding them back. I think a lot of the people within the industry would love to see it more open. It's not going to change immediately. Of course, there are still issues around devices are on different frequencies, and there's a good chance that Motorola could change things. There were some rumours kicking around that, for example, the Motorola Z10, which is the successor to the Z8 that we saw last year, is going to be used by T-Mobile to launch their 3G network. Now, if that happens, they could put some serious money behind it, and it could sell very well, because I suspect it would be heavily subsidised. So it's, in some ways, things haven't changed that much, but we are moving forward slowly. But one thing we probably should discuss in a minute is how the US is sort of taking the whole open theme that has been a big part of the sort of openness argument and debate in the last year here in Europe.
I mean, certainly, yeah, that's one, because just before CTIA, we had the closing of the Spectrum auction that was organised by the American Federal Communications Commission, which was won by Verizon, and because it went over a certain dollar value, which is like something like $4 billion or something, it has to be open. And, you know, yes, the headline sentence is open to any device, open to any application. But, you know, there's always this thinking, especially in my mind, that, you know, it's still an American network. They'll still find some way to limit what's going on there. I mean, was there a buzz about Verizon and the open and the band C, as it were?
There was a certain amount of excitement from the US audience, but actually it's worth talking about this openness. You know, this was the big one of the big buzzwords of the conference. The other was WiMAX, which we'll come back to later. But it's a very peculiar American form of openness. It's really just about the operators writing a new set of rules for themselves and saying that everything is open. Now, you know, when we talk about open to all devices and applications, that's really no different to a standard GSM network in some ways. There are a few differences in terms of there being less gatekeeping from the operators, but as you know, in Europe, you can take any GSM device, put any SIM card in it, and you'll be able to use it. And, you know, obviously, if it's an unlocked device that's open, you'll be able to put any application on it. So it's really nothing particularly special. And, you know, both Sprint and Verizon, and to a lesser extent AT&T and T-Mobile, were talking about openness. But really, you know, more of the excitement for this openness was around unlimited packages in terms of calling, minutes, SMS and data, which was being sold off at about $99 a month, depending on the network. And, you know, that was seemed to be a bigger focus in some ways than the openness itself. So, you know, I think it's a bit of a misnomer to think of it as open in the same way that we're talk about in Europe in terms of software platforms and, you know, the service layers being open to third parties. They are, but it's very early days, and we're just talking about the network here. You know, there isn't really the same adoption in terms of in terms of software platforms. And I really feel it's just the operators, you know, in some ways pandering to the government to try and avoid the regulation that they're so deathly afraid of in the States. They want to maintain their position as long as possible, and certainly at the moment they're in a better position to do it than a lot of European operators who do face very real competition and who face sort of more intelligent consumers. Well, it's not so much intelligent consumers, but better educated to what's possible. So yes, there was excitement inevitably around that, and 700 megahertz is being held up as, you know, very real sort of next generation technology, along with LTE, which is sort of the successor to 3G that will be found in Europe as well, of course. But it sort of left rather a sour taste in the mouth, because this talk of openness wasn't really, to my mind, at least very open.
And of course, you also mentioned WiMAX there, which is, well, WiMAX is a strange one. It's essentially a very big Wi-Fi hotspot that goes very quickly. But it's, I think WiMAX is being pushed especially by Sprint in the US.
Yeah, that's right. Sprint have a sort of program or a rollout called Zohm, if you like. I think that's the correct pronunciation. It's XOHM. And they were pushing WiMAX as well, sort of CTIA is kind of an industry standard. And yes, you're absolutely right. It's very like Wi-Fi in that it's not a cellular technology. It's a hotspot technology. And yes, it has a range of several miles. And Sprint are planning several urban rollouts. And there are a few existing ones already and more on the way. And there are a number of devices being announced with WiMAX capability. One of these was the Nokia N810 WiMAX edition, which is just a N810 internet tablet running MAMO with a WiMAX radio in it. And again, there was quite a lot of excitement around this as a possible alternative to cellular technologies and maybe sort of Wi-Fi growing up to be more of a wide area technology rather than a local area technology. But again, you know, you have to take a lot of this with a pinch of salt. It was being quite heavily hyped, and yet it's going to have relatively limited rollout. And there's a lot of questions around how important this is going to be. The cellular technology remains the best solution for coverage over large areas. Where WiMAX does have quite a lot of possibilities is in sort of local areas, sort of maybe in an office or over a conference venue, for example, or in urban areas where there's a high population density that means it's sort of quite cost effective to put in this kind of technology. However, it does have some of the same problems in terms of indoor usage. And there's been a recent report back from one of the trials in Australia whereby there's been real problems getting it internally. And the standards, having been finalised, there's a couple of non-standard networks, for example. There's one in Seattle. But it does feel like it's a coming technology. But at the same time, in talking to a few people about it, you know, there's an increasing feeling that in some ways the actual technology is pretty irrelevant. It's just another way of getting your data through the pipe. And the idea that in the future will just be bearer free, and that's to say it doesn't really matter what type of connection you're using, whether it's Wi-Fi, WiMAX, LTE, 3G, GSM, because as far as you're concerned you won't know any difference. The software on board will be intelligent enough to just choose the right data connection for you, and obviously power users will have subscriptions to everything in order to optimize their connection when mobile, but others may choose just to have a standard GSM connection if they're just doing talk time, for example. But operating systems like Symbian, with their free play technology, are building bearer independent right into the OS. And so, for example, you know, you'll be able to hand over calls from different networks to each other when appropriate. So yes, WiMAX was an interesting technology, and yes, there's plenty of buzz around it, but there does seem to be an increasing realisation that in some ways that technology really doesn't matter. It's going to be about the stuff that runs on top of it, and that the connection, far more so than in the past, is just becoming a commodity. And obviously operators are probably keen to avoid that because it means lower costs for them. But most people seem to agree that operators are going to have to look away from simply providing the pipe and see how they could add value to it by providing sort of software and services on top. And as we've said before, that's where the future is. And it's no coincidence that Sony Ericsson and Nokia with Ovia are looking to that software and service for the future. Operators are just the same. You know, Orange in Europe is one of the most advanced in that regard in terms of providing mobile TV services, music services, and tying in with the PC and the internet in their sort of quad play strategies. And increasingly, I think we'll see more of that. The US market is perhaps a bit behind it in that sense, as they don't really have the same triple play strategies that we do in Europe. But I think that's probably just a matter of time.
And probably something that we'll see the effect of certainly over the next 6 to 9 months, and at CTIA next year. I mean, if there was one phrase you could take away from CTIA, Rafe, what would it be?
Ooh, that's a difficult question. I think probably it would be American. I mean, the CTIA time was when it was quite an important conference. Actually, there was something of an international feel to it. It's always been very American-focused. But increasingly now, it is a very US-focused thing. And it has changed from the past. It's far more business-to-business than it used to be. The actual show floor was smaller than it used to be. And I think the trouble for CTIA is MWC in Barcelona has grown an awful lot in the last few years, and that now really overshadows. And given that CTIA happens just a couple of months later, you know, it's not perhaps surprising that there was little real news out of CTIA. But there are a few things we should talk about, so I'm going to avoid your one word answer. But there was Windows Mobile 6.1, which has been announced by Microsoft. It's a fairly open secret, but that was announced. And so that was things like improved Outlook Exchange mail experience, redone home screen. It's sort of got now a sort of a swivel type thing on it where you can access more of your information more quickly. There's improvements to the HTML email. There's improvements to the web browser. It's actually going to be running a version of Internet Explorer 6, which has been ported to Windows Mobile, and goes a long way to getting Windows Mobile up to the standard of sort of S60, the iPhone, and some of the other platforms. It's not quite there yet, but it's certainly a big leap forward. Elsewhere, there's been some tidying up of sort of dialogues and general improvement in the structure, but fundamentally it's the same product as Windows Mobile 6, and it's really the product that Windows Mobile 6 should have been when it was released. However, I would say Windows Mobile does offer the best Exchange mail experience, so if that's all you're looking for from mobile device, they're well worth looking at. the consumer features and multimedia do remain quite weak, though, and I can't really see it breaking out of the enterprise in this release, despite the sort of desires of Microsoft to do so. Robbie Back in his keynote said that Microsoft wanted to move into the consumer space, but I honestly don't think they have the product that enables them to do that yet. So it'll be a space to watch, because clearly when Microsoft make a commitment to do something, they will put money behind it. But it's certainly going to take them a year or two to get it into a shape that's ready to compete with some of the N series devices. I'm thinking particularly here with the multimedia capability, things like the camera, the video recording, but also to a lesser extent some of the music and other multimedia components. They go some way with web, but even that needs improvement. Elsewhere, there are also some a few announcements from Symbian that are just worth highlighting quickly. One of which was SQLite, which was announced with Symbian 9.5, but Symbian chose the show to sort of highlight this a little bit more. And SQLite is a database technology which has been ported to Symbian OS that allows for very fast databases, and is really aimed at third-party programmers at the moment. There'll be a download available from the Symbian site so people can play with it on current devices, the 9.3 devices, that is. But in due course, it's probably also going to be used internally within the OS for databases. But to give you an example of how fast it is, they had a demo whereby they'd loaded 2.4 million Wikipedia articles into a database and created a front end for browsing and searching them. And the search was pretty much instant. As fast as you could type, it would do a search on what you typed in so far. Extremely impressive. And the irony is that a 2.4 million Wikipedia database was quicker to search than the actual contacts database on my phone, which contains maybe 300 or 400 entries. So it's certainly a technology that's very good to see on Symbian OS. Plus, it's a fairly standard thing. You'll find it on other platforms, so it makes it easier for developers to port applications that use databases to the phone. And I suspect we'll see that become increasingly a standard database and replace some of the sort of Symbian database technology that has been used thus far. They were also talking about the Dolby technology, which basically adds surround sound to phones. I actually had a listen to the demo of this, and it's really quite amazing the difference it makes, even for someone like me who's not a particular audiophile. This isn't a standard part of the Symbian OS. It's a licensed technology from Dolby that manufacturers can choose to add to their phones. It's already available in a couple of the Symbian phones from Japan, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if this sort of turns up in future music phones from either Nokia or Sony Ericsson, now that it's sort of been pre-integrated into the Symbian OS. There are also a couple of features for developers to take note of, one of which is Symbian Raptor, which is the new compile technology, which allows you to do builds up to 10 or 20 times faster. Now, initially, this is really aimed at the Symbian licensees, so that when they're building parts of the OS, they can do so much quicker. But to give you some idea of how long the building takes, and the building, I should say, is going from code to sort of the bit that goes onto the ROM on the phone, if you like, in layman's terms. And previously that had to be done basically overnight because it was a multi-hour operation. Now with Rapture it's gone down to just a few hours. Now the significance of this is basically that it will allow for quicker development and again improve the time to market for a lot of Symbian products. And I suspect we'll also see this technology trickle down to lower into the development food chain, so in due course developers will also get access to this sort of thing. In practical terms, the way it works is it does basically parallel build technology rather than going through it from end to end. It sort of runs things in parallel to make things a lot quicker. I think that's probably all the big news out of CTA, at least from a Symbian point of view. There were quite a few cool applications on display. For example, Sling Player were showing off the new version of their Sling Player. We're going to have a look at that on the site in a few days. And there were a few other companies who will have stuff soon on Symbian that we'll probably write about on the site, but one of these was Skyfire, which is a very impressive browser technology that basically uses a server-assisted architecture to give you literally the full web experience on your phone. And that means everything from Java to Flashlight to Shockwave content. And the way it works is basically it gets the page on the server and then pushes it down to the phone using proprietary technology. With a result, it's much quicker to load pages. And unlike other sort of proxy-based solutions like Opera Mini, it actually preserves some of the interactivity in Ajax-type technologies. So we'll have to really wait until we see the final release of that. It's available on Windows Mobile at the moment, and I understand it will be available on S60 sort of by the end of the summer of this year. Similarly, there's a company called Dashwire that's working on basically a super web sync solution. I think it's probably easiest to describe that on the site in due course, but if you want to have a look again, that's available for Windows Mobile right now, and it's just come out of beta, will be available for Symbian in due course, I think. And I also ran into Taproot, who are doing their Wi-Fi hotspot solution. Some of the people may recall there's Joiku Spot, which does a similar thing, basically turns your mobile phone into a Wi-Fi hotspot. The thing with the Taproot thing, it's much more mature technology, and they've actually got more experience of Wi-Fi on Symbian OS. Some of their technology is right in the OS itself, and they've helped with the sort of the drivers at a very low level. Consequently, they are probably in a very good position to build this kind of phone as a hotspot technology. And the demo I saw was certainly very impressive, supporting the full range of protocols in both security and transport protocols. But the thing that probably impressed me most was in the labs they've had up to 20 clients connecting to a single phone to use its hotspot, and in the application they've got 5. So that means you could be in a sort of hotel room having a meeting or whatever and have 5 laptops connect to a single phone to use as a hotspot. Of course, you'd have some issues with the bandwidth maybe at that point. But as I say, very impressive technology. Unfortunately, it's going to be marketed through operators, which, given it's an enterprise technology, perhaps does make sense. But there may be a beta which some consumers can get onto. And hopefully operators will be encouraged by the response of things like this. I'm sure this is the sort of technology that makes an awful lot of sense. You know, why have a separate data card for light users when you can just use your phone? You know, it's much cheaper for operators, and it's probably less hassle for consumers to carry it along as well. So as I say, there was quite a lot of things like that. And yes, there were some overriding themes about the next generation technologies of WiMAX and LTE. And there were some talk about openness from US carriers and a number of small phone releases. I mean, Nokia, for example, released some CDMA entry-level devices, as did, I believe, Motorola and Sony Ericsson. But the main theme was sort of around, you know, where do we go next in terms of openness of networks. From a Symbian point of view, it was being present. You know, UIQ was showing off 3.3. The S60 guys weren't there specifically, although there are a couple of them wandering around for those who wanted to talk to them. But perhaps one of the absences that weren't there, and that was, of course, Apple and Google. And there was a certain amount of talk about how Android perhaps wasn't delivering on its promise yet, and there were perhaps being a little optimistic with the timescale, some concern from device manufacturers, but also developers suggesting that there wasn't that much clarity around how much operators were going to be able to customize the phone, with mainly a concern around the fact that you'd end up with 25 variants of Android from 25 different operators. I think that may be a bit too pessimistic, but it's interesting to see after the initial hype around the Open Handset Alliance and Android, a little bit of reality has set in, and no one really expects them to seriously challenge any time in the next 2 years. And beyond that, as ever in the mobile industry, it's very difficult to predict. So as you can see from CTIA, hopefully has given a good view of the US market and talked about some of the technologies coming out. But it was a different start to MWC, which is frenetic in terms of new handset releases and sort of you know, all the big news coming out. It was quite a pleasure to be able to attend CTIA and run into lots of people and talk around the issues a little bit more rather than merely talking about news. But I think that rounds up CTIA quite nicely.
Now, and in all of that, you found time to do stuff you don't want to tell us about as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I should say a particular thank you to people. They know who they are. Who we ended up touring the strip and stretch limo rides and various other unspeakable things, all of which I hasten to add were completely completely friendly, and I didn't partake in some of the more extreme elements of Vegas, shall we put it that way. I wouldn't want to ruin the reputation of All About Symbian, after all.
Well, there we go. I think I managed to do that quite nicely in London over the weekend.
Yes, well, I probably should have guessed that, really. So, talking of London, this was the over-the-air conference. Perhaps you could give my voice a break and let listeners get their ears back into a UN frame of mind and tell us a bit about what you've been up to.
a Ewan frame of mind. You make me sound like something from Clean's Clear Water Revival in the 70s. There's our obligatory 1970s prog rock reference, given that Steve's not here. Yes, over the year was a mix of a conference, a hackathon, a get-together, a drinks, and a building session. Essentially what happened was the BBC, along with a number of very high-profile sponsors, who I shall just call up now on the big list, decided to get as many of the mobile developers in the UK into one room. Friday during the day was taken up by sessions from the likes of the BBC, Vodafone's Betavine SDK system, Adobe, Sun, Yahoo, Google, Forum Nokia, and the dev.mobi team. And I mean, the sessions that we had here are, you know, very much on APIs, very deep involved services that coders are going to use at a sort of fundamental building block level, how to address text, how to get location data, how to access services like the accelerometer and stuff. The sort of thing that's you know, just bread and circuses that the programmers just love getting their hands on, that we kind of avoid because it's scary. We wait for the programmers to do it. But once all those sessions had been done, there's a programming competition on top of that as well. Throughout the day, people submit their ideas for the team, and then from about 7 o'clock in the evening, they just code. They take all the APIs that they've learned, the new tools that have been given to them that day, and tools that they've brought along themselves, and code their ideas throughout the night. There's some more sessions in the Saturday morning, and at that point, most people are testing, and then at lunchtime on the Saturday, they all presented their maybe 21 new mobile applications. Now, admittedly, most of them were very rough and ready. They'd only had about 14 or 15 man-hours work on them. But one or two of them, I suspect, had just been, oh, we'll take this along because we're working on it and pretend we did it there. Last minute, I'm looking at you. But some great and lovely ideas that I really want to see. And yet again, lastminute.com, known for the travel. But they have an engineering lab as well. And they came up with Phone Fight, which I suspect, you know, if Stefan were here, he would just love this. Obviously taking their inspiration from the lightsaber accelerometer toy that you get for the S60 devices. They've paired up two N95s over Bluetooth. And your phone became an invisible sword.
Right.
So you could do the swords and the swinging and everything to try and get past your opponent's defenses. So you could block, you could attack, you could parry with your phone as if it was a Wii controller.
Okay, so that definitely sounds up your street, Ewan. Were you sort of channeling Highlander?
Actually, I was kind of busy because I decided that a team of us thought that rather than watch the final episode of Torchwood, which was happening that night, we decided to try and film it ourselves and make our best guess at what would happen. So we filmed an entire HD episode of Torchwood in about 6 hours.
As you do, and I'm sure that's available online for people who want to go and look at it. I think we'll put it in the show notes. So what was the connection to mobile, Ewan?
There wasn't a connection to mobile. I just thought it would be a fun thing. No, we used mobiles to record them all. see, mobile isn't just a handset device. There is a strong, with a developer conference, a strong thing on the device. But mobile, you know, an N810, is it really a mobile or is it a device? It's whatever. The cameras that are coming out now, it's just playing with the tools. So, I mean, you know, things like upload, streaming, and, of course, pushing that back down to the mobile phone and the small screen as well. Nokia always going about the fourth screen. So, yeah. And it was fun as well, and I've not done proper programming for a long time. But some of the people that were doing the proper programming, and I suspect we'll see some of these over the next coming months, there was a lovely location-aware application, again, packaged as a game. A lot of these were packaged up as quite fun things, which was Capture the Flag. Basically, rather than have a physical flag or playing in something like World of Warcraft or the Xbox 360 game with the Sergeant Halo, that's the one, you ran into cell IDs and your phone's GPS and cell ID would metaphorically pick up a flag from a central server, and then you have to run back with it being carried on your phone to base, hoping that nobody else with a phone that was playing the game would come up and get near you and capture the flag off you. So, very big glorified game of tag, but with mobile phones and location-based servicing. it was cross-platform as well. So, for example, there was a Twitter client for the home screen on Windows Mobile was demonstrated. There was a lot of work with a Bluetooth and friend of a friend from Tom Morris, which basically allows you to build your own social networking of a Bluetooth IDs, and it would tell you when people are close by and they're on their Bluetooth headset. But probably the one that was most elegant and the one that I featured first in the report on Over the Air, which is back on our website, was the 21st Century Fridge Door, which basically allows you to upload text, notes, images and media from your phone to a website. And the plan was that this website would eventually one day be your fridge door. So you could, rather than write a sticky note and put it behind a magnet on your fridge in your kitchen, you could use your phone to do that. And you could do it from wherever you are. So if you were out traveling, which you and I don't want to do, we could take a picture and send it back to be on the fridge.
Yep. Yeah, and I know we've talked in the past about the role that fridge play in mobility. And I, for one, was when I read your report, that sort of thing is... it's great to see that kind of development coming on. Indeed, a lot of the over-the-air stuff, which Ewan mentions, as he says in his article, talks about a lot of the trends that we talk about a lot on the podcast without necessarily going into that much detail. So presumably you enjoyed seeing and discussing and talking about some of the cutting-edge technologies that are going to be with us for the next few years.
I think what was exciting was the fact you had this cutting-edge technology, but where they'd been wrapped up in demos, they'd been actually given very practical, useful things. I mean, it's all very well going, here's the accelerometer API, and you know, all of us in the blogs, and they go, woo! But when somebody comes up and goes, look, we've made a game where you can pretend to have a sword, you know, we all go, woo, they're using the accelerometer, but the rest of the world goes, that's cool. Really cool.
Yeah.
You know, and the fridge store, I mean, the fridge is always used, you know, what happens when your fridge is connected to the internet is a popular standby, but it's because it actually provides an anchor in real life, and you need to be able to demonstrate that a phone works in real life. I mean, the idea of the mobile phone for a long time was just crazy. You know, that's something the military needs. You don't need that for a housewife going down the shops or somebody going away in business. You don't need that. But when you've got real life applications, the mobile phone becomes invaluable. It's the same with the camera. For a long time, the camera on the mobile phone was just a noddy feature. It was just, hey, it's a camera. What now? Nowadays, you wouldn't dream of selling a phone without a camera unless you had really strong marketing or enterprise decision to make. And I think things like the accelerometer, GPS, video, again, a lot of people look at that and go, what do I want that on a phone for? But as we start to see real-world issues and problems being answered by this technology, that's when it becomes useful. And what Over the Air allowed was a showcasing of, first of all, the actual raw tools, and secondly, that the programmers, the developers, and the designers, certainly in the UK, can take these raw tools and actually do something that makes a difference.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. You know, we talk a lot about these technologies, and I'm quite fond of saying that really we don't really know the cool stuff that they'll enable yet because it hasn't been invented yet. And I think this goes a long way to proving your point, and you're absolutely right. You know, with stuff has to be grounded in the real world, there has to be a use for it. And I think a lot of the issues now surrounding development are as much about being creative as purely technical skill sets. You know, it will become easier to develop as we see more cross-platform tools come in over the next sort of 5 to 10 years. But I think that creative spark will still be there, and you'll still have to come up with that great idea. So it'll be very interesting to see what comes out. And of course, with so many more possibilities now, sort of things like sensors come onto mobile phones, they become more powerful. And when I say sensors, it's not just the sort of stuff like GPS and camera, it's also, you know, the angle of the phone, the magnetometers to sense direction, that sort of thing. And, you know, a lot of the tools, as you say, you know, between web runtime and OpenSea and Java and Flashlight and Silverlight, there are any number of different things that can enable things. So yes, absolutely. So it sounds like you had a good time. I'm sorry I missed that event. I think that's about all the time we've got for on the Insight this week. However, Bert, before we go, I did just want to very briefly mention that the N-Gage has had its official launch. It's now available for the N95 8GB, the N95 and the N82. It will be coming to other handsets in due course. Ewan, I mean, do you have any very quick reaction on the N-Gage launch?
There's going to be a lot of people saying, oh, why is it taking so long? It's terrible. But you know what? Nokia are still so far ahead of the game. One of the things that I spotted last week was that Sony are now making the groundbreaking step of releasing one of their new games only on their online store, where you have to go to a web browser and click on it and then put a USB cable in and download it and put it on your Sony PlayStation. And people are just really, certainly in the PSP scene, going, oh, is this going to work? What's going to happen? This is very risky. And then I turn around and I look at the N-Gage, and with there's trials, there's demos, there's 3-day, there's 5-day, there's full term, there's massive numbers of titles coming out. We've got, at the launch, we had a new title called Brain Challenge, which we're going to be reviewing shortly on both All About N-Gage and All About Symbian. Nokia, at this point, to our, us who've been watching it for a long time, are quite late, but to everybody else out there in the gaming world, they are so far ahead of the market. They just need to, I don't even think at the moment they're concentrating on getting that message over. I think they're just, look, it's here, we're going to make sure it's rock solid. They made a sensible decision, I think, you know, long term, to launch not to a date, but launch when it was ready, which is why we've had so many delays and pushbacks. But it means that we now have this wonderful 100% system that works, that's been tested, that's as bulletproof as Terminal 5 isn't at London Heathrow. And I just think it's wonderful that they're so far ahead of the game. And in that very Finnish way, they're not really shouting about it, but they've now got, you know, with all those devices being switched on, in the region of 15 to 20 million game-enabled handsets. The PSP is at 40 million total sales. The Nintendo DS is about 50 million. They're halfway to catching up already, and nobody in the gaming industry is noticed. Just
I think that's absolutely right. We'll obviously be talking more about this in a future podcast, because it's obviously quite a big issue and it's one of the central planks of Nokia's future strategy. But I think people need to realize, sort of step away from the fact maybe it's launched with 5 games. I think FIFA 08 has now also been added to the lineup, and look more at the sort of the platform that it enables. And I wouldn't even necessarily talk about the sort of enabled handsets out there right now, because it's always a tricky issue how many people are going to download that sort of thing. But you can bet your bottom dollar that there are going to be plenty of N-Series devices sold in the next year. And certainly by the end of 2009, I would imagine that N-Series, in terms of devices out there, will probably be the biggest portable gaming platform that's cohesive in the way that's traditionally thought about as a gaming platform. You can also argue about Java on mobile, but that's highly fragmented, and you know, it's not really a gaming platform in the traditional sense. So I agree with you, and I think there are still a few problems. You know, there are still reports of the occasional crash, but Nokia are looking to make this rock solid, and it's really about, at the moment at least, the platform rather than any one specific game. And it's interesting to note that Nokia seem fairly clearly in mind to have a fairly rapid release rate of games. They're talking about, you know, one a week, maybe even more than that. Some of the bigger titles will perhaps become further apart, but you know, that's a lot of games that can go through the system quite quickly, and it will build up a catalogue that's relatively attractive in quite a short time. And as Ewan says, it's the ease of use is what it's all about. You know, being able to download and do trials all from the handset without any other intervention is a, you know, a very forward-looking strategy. And as I say, it's something we'll talk about in future weeks once we've had a chance to play around with some of it. So we're going to have to go and work very hard in the next week and play some games. You up for that, Ewan?
I think so, yes. And first up... Oh, hold on. I'm busy now.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to this insight. We'll see you next week. And I think we'll leave you and shouting away there in the background. So thanks very much for listening. Appreciate it, as always.